It's time to tune in to Hot Seat Haas. You are now tuned in to Hot Seat Haas. It doesn't matter if you're Gen Z, millennial, or straight up boomer. Give it up for your host, Hot Seat Haas. The following podcast contains explicit language. You can support this podcast within the Anchor app. And just like that, we're back. Welcome to the Hot Seat Haas podcast. You are now part of a community in touch with culture, education, and collective empowerment. And now, your host, Hot Seat Haas.
One thing for sure, one law that was passed is clearly being practiced right now, because I smell some weed. Someone is smoking. All right. You smell that, Marsha?
Out of Asbury Park, New Jersey, we about to fuck the whole game up. You know what I'm saying?
Beloved brothers and sisters. that's how I'm starting my shit off for now. Excuse me. Beloved brothers and sisters. It is the Hot Seat. A new audio experience. Got about 20 minutes in this ride. I got some time to talk on the way back. Hopefully we could take our time with this one, because I want to share some interesting audio clips, sound bites, whatever you want to call it. Shout out to Leopold Jacobs, 1983, a lifestyle brand for your mobile business professional. And all that good stuff. Hit the website, find something you love. Also, Bubbles Kept Cleaning. It's all in the bubbles. If you know somebody, close proximity, or, you know, maybe they're out, you know, overseas somewhere, just let them know about your boy, and all that greatness. There's always so much going on, as we know, or as maybe we don't know. But you could turn on your, you know, your module, whatever phone you have, maybe you have an iPhone, you know, and the majority of us, and I'm not knocking anybody, the majority of us should be in the realm of an iPhone 10 and better right now. The majority. Maybe some of y'all still have the 8s. I don't know. But I think the majority of us should be around the iPhone 10 and better. And that doesn't have anything to do with, like, being a iPhone consumer, or, you know, being a freaking, you know, being addicted to your iPhone, or you know, addicted to the newest new thing or whatever. But it just, I think a lot of people that aren't, like, updating their phone within a timely manner, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I don't know, I think you should. iPhone 6, 7, whatever. 8, 9, 10. It's only so much you can do. And I guess it's not. You know what I mean? I don't know. I guess we think we have to stay up to date on these things. You know? Because, like, an iPhone 10 is basically like you're driving, like, maybe a 2018 vehicle. there's nothing wrong with that at all. You know what I mean? I'm currently in like a 2011. And this shit rides. Perfect. Wonderful. You know? Is it within the black communities that we care about having the newest ride? Or the newest iPhone? Or I don't think so. I think you can go in any community or any, you know, and there are people that want the new shit. With that said, I got this new iPhone 14 Pro Max maybe like a week ago. And it's pretty dope. You know, when you get a new phone, you like it, you're happy. You know what I mean? You're like, you're excited about it. It's just that every time I get a new phone, I just hate the process of transferring everything over. Even though it's usually easily synced or linked, you know, with the iCloud or whatever, it just sucks. Because you gotta go into every app now and log in and do all of this shit. And that's when it gets to the point where, you know what I mean, like, I just want to, like, in a sense, start over, you know? I want to erase my online history. Not like I got shit to worry about, no. I'm just saying, I just want to start from scratch, you know what I mean? Because when you think about how many times did I log into some shit, how many times did I create a fucking profile, this, that, the third, this shit is insane. It's overwhelming, you know what I mean? That you gotta sign in to fucking everything, you know? Or link this shit, or, you know what I mean? As soon as you sign in, your fucking Google pops up and they wanna, this shit is a web connected and we are in it, you know what I mean? Like, some of us are in that motherfucker, you know? Like, my son was going crazy the other day because he came across a spider web and it was spiders in that motherfucker. He was like, oh, and you get to see the spiders, like, you know, caught in the shit. It's like Charlotte's Web, a great fucking book, great movie. But you know, the nigga was just stuck, it seemed like, you know. But I don't know, it's just, you know, just want to free myself, you know, I just want to erase it all and just start all over. Because I could start with one, you know, one fucking email, one app, and that's it. It's like, find me on this. And if you don't want to find me on this, or you whatever, because you're not going to see me on there. You know what I mean? Like, because, like, the best one got to be Twitter or Tumblr. So it's like, or not even, you just say, I'm just going to be on my own website. Because you could doing everything I do from there. But then you got to link it somewhere, right? Or you got to share it somewhere, right? Because they ask you, share this to your profile, or share this to Facebook, or share this to this, share this to that. Fucking interesting. Anyway, I'm not saying I wanted to start like that, but it is what it is. Kanye West still bugging, and he spoke about a lot of ill things, or continuing to speak about a lot of ill shit, and the idea of his mom being sacrificed in the same sense as a bunch of other celebrities, whatever, families. And if you're in this hip-hop thing, or if you're in this CT thing, or if you're in this idea of knowing or idea of self and awareness, and you can just look at shit and just see it. You know what I mean? Like, every time I watch TV, I see it. And if I could, and if I'll, you know, you start explaining shit to people and you just lose them. And that's why I call a lot of people idiots. Or you're stupid. Because every time that I talk, it seems like I'm speaking a foreign language to people about stuff that I guess it's, you know what I mean? It's like the, I don't know. If you can see it, I can, you know what I mean? Like, it sounds weird, but I guess not everybody sees the shit. You know what I mean? So nobody really gets it. Nobody really can get it. And I think it's a an idea, right? Because I was talking to somebody and I was like, yo, one day we have to talk. And it's a talk about where you at of knowing what shit is about in this world. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, where are you at? Because in order to engage in a manner that would be beneficial, I should understand where you're at. You know what I mean? Because a lot of this has to do with just people not being on the same level or even in a close proximity to a level of understanding. So they don't understand when I talk because they're just, you know? So, but like, with that said, you know what I mean? Like, I always want to, you know, it's a few people that I just want to talk to and let them understand a lot of stuff or let for them to share it with me, because I don't think a lot of people look at shit the same way, obviously, right? And that's fair. There's nothing wrong with that. But the idea of looking at these things and being able to see it and being able to decipher it and being able to be like, wow. And once you look at it in a sense that way, and everything you start to look at or view or take in or listen to or whatever, a lot of visual, usually visual, because that's where you can see the, you know what I mean? Because we can't hear the influence of audio underneath what we're given, you know, if you understand what I'm saying. But to see things, you can see, you can, it's, you know, and this is, it's no knock, you know, just the ability to see is the blessing, and it's not a knock on anyone that, you know, has these inabilities on it. You know what I mean? We're not talking about that. We're just talking about just the basic idea of being able to look at something in a more critical way or intellect, you know, in a different manner, in a sense. You know? Because it's so alarming. You know what I mean? It's like this thing, like, say, like, and then it all happens to us, right? You get a new car, maybe you want a new car, or you have your eyes set on this new idea of a car or vehicle, and then now all you do for the next day or, you know, in your routes or whatever, you see the car, and it's like, damn, is it a sign? Should I be getting this car? Or, and there's not even just like a sign like that, but it's just, it's on your mind now. So you're just gonna, you know what I mean? And it's like that in a sense. Because once you get it, you'll be like, wow. And it changes your whole perception of, in a sense, life, because you start to analyze past, right? maybe you start to prep to evaluate the moment, right, in which we should be in the moment, right? And then maybe the anxieties of it have, and it's both on the end, the anxieties of the future, and then, you know what I mean, the anxieties of past. You know? So, it's very interesting. And I hope that I'm not just talking and people are like, what is he talking about? You know what I mean? But it's really, you know, it's like math, right? We look at this, the equations and stuff, and we're like, what is this? Until you apply the application or, you know, and then you're like, I can decipher this equation. I can get to zero. I can find the, you know what I mean? And how excited or happy are you when you get to understand something, right? You know what I mean? Because I remember in math hasn't, you know, I would never really thought that that was a great subject of mine, right? And through life, I reacted to it that way. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't like it. So it was a problem throughout my, you know what I mean? I avoided it, you know? And in the 10th grade, I got it. Or that was the year. And I'm not saying up until that, but I mean, obviously I had to be able to be doing a significant sense of a job in order to continue to make it to 10th grade at that time, right? So I wasn't doing that bad in math, right? But in the 10th grade, I got it. And in 11th grade, I had a dickhead janitor, you know, teacher, and he had his, you know, and I didn't get it anymore. You know what I mean? I didn't enjoy it. He didn't explain it well. I didn't get it, you know? But the 10th grade, I was so happy in the 10th grade because it was this idea of, it making sense because you got it. You know what I mean? And it's just the idea of, in the manner in which you find the answer, right? Or the manner in which it is explained in order to find the answer. And like, how did homeboy, and I'm talking about the teacher, figure out that way of expressing or explaining it to the students, in which it was very, they got it, you know what I mean? And it was fun to answer questions, or, you know what I mean? Because it was that time where it's like, all right, put this equation on the board, somebody figure it out. And it's like, fuck that. I mean, you turn your head, you do everything to denounce it, in a sense, or to avoid it, right? And then at the time, it comes where I'm raising my hand, you know what I mean? It's exciting. Even in those times I raised my hands, it was times I got the equation wrong when I got to the board, but it wasn't like, oh, you got it wrong, go sit down now. It was like, no, stay right there, stay right there, stay right there. And, you know, you're close. Or, you know, so it's just the same with these things, because it is this idea of understanding life or understanding what's given and being able to decipher it or interpret it and to figure out why, or, you know, what's this about, or why do we have this at our presence? You know what I mean? Or why is this news coming out? Why, you know, and it may seem like it's just simply put. as of in a sense of like, you know, like but a lot of it, it's to me, you know what I mean, it seems like, because it's no way, you know, somebody said something interesting recently, right? And it's like, you know, let's say black gangs plan, right? And they can plan, and they can plan, and they, now you got, you know, a certain color associated with this gang. You got your leaders, you got, you know, you got the roles established. You got the turfs, in a sense, where we can occupy. You got, you know, it's, you know, you got the higher ups, the hierarchy of who's in, you know. So, and then, you know, you look at the average view of a inner city black, or a black that is tied to a gang, or in that view of it, and it's shown, you know, you can see where we don't have this advantage. We don't have the community. We don't have a lot of the well-being in which we still can come together and plan and execute these ideas and come up with all of this shit, right? For our gang, you know what I mean? So with people that have better resources or in better conditions, whatever, you know, you can't think that they could plan in the same manner as a gang and grow their enterprise or grow anything or in the same vein, you know what I mean? With better resource, like, you know, like imagine if a bunch of blacks had a bunch of resources. I don't think the overall idea would be to create a gang in which we're gonna go fucking terrorize people and shit and flaunt our colors and crip walk and, you know what I mean, like put our flags on our pants and no, you know, I think that the idea of what a lot of people, you know, it would be rooted in, let's establish a better way for people. That's what I think, and I could be wrong. That's fair. You know, so I'm gonna probably stop right now for a minute, and I'll just come back with it. And I hate to pause right now, but I want to continue this, and I want you to come back and enjoy or understand where I want to go with it. You dig? And I hope that you're following me. I hope this just doesn't sound like a bunch of, you know, words put together, because it isn't. And a lot of these clips, I don't know if it'll help you, but you can see what's what with these clips. And we'll talk about them when I get back. It is Hot Seat Hosh. Y'all be good. Go grab a snack, whatever. Do your thing. It is Monday, and it is currently 9:17. It is 45 degrees outside. We are in the DMV area, Eastern Standard Time, and all that good stuff. Just give you some context, and hopefully your week is getting started. And shout out to a good week. We'll be back. It's Hot Seat Hosh. All right, people, we are back. Sorry if you hear outside wind. I'm smoking me a cigar. I haven't done one of these in a long time. Driving. While driving. But, yeah. We're back. Segment 2, Hot Seat Haas. A new audio experience. Shout out to everyone. It is now, what time is it? 11:11. Woo! Look at that. Jeez. Y'all know. But, yeah, back to where we were going. I don't want to talk so much because I want to play these clips. I said at a time a few episodes ago about certain individuals that have been speaking out against said individuals, and you can look at it and be like, why is it like that? You know what I mean? Why are they so expressive? Why does it seem like they have so much to say about this? And in other areas, they don't have anything to say, or they have very little to say. And I think that is interesting because why are they so quiet, or they have very little to say about certain things? Certain individuals have smut on their rep, or they have some dirty laundry that they got to figure out, or they've been figured out, or they may... You know, let me kick this person down in order to put me up. And I'm not saying that's what it is. I'm just saying this is what I look at and I see that stands out to me. Because you've got to see a certain amount of incredible, notable, premier podcasters or people with a platform, when certain individuals come out to speak, they just listen and they don't say anything in response, or said individuals don't have anything to say about said individuals that have smut on a rep. And I understand. But when you see certain individuals talk about certain individuals' smut, it becomes a certain bias there, because why aren't they speaking about this said smut? You get what, like, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? And it's like, what's really wild, right, to me, right? Murder. Rape, child abuse, sexual child abuse. There's layers, right? But I think for the most part, those are the most concrete, right? Murder, you know, rape in that manner. Hopefully, these words are, you know, explaining or helping to explain my point, and then not something that, you know, is offensive towards anybody. But certain, I've been instrumental in people speaking out against certain individuals, but it's only pertaining to what is spoken about, you know what I mean, that I can talk about or I can speak of. And you evaluate that based on said individuals. And it seems that everybody with smut on their rep wants to kick certain individuals down that have been very prominent in our news cycles or just after third. This is my opinion. And it doesn't mean it's right. It's just interesting to me that we only can speak about certain individuals, whether they make offense, you know, or you highlight these individuals and you chip at them, but you fail to address your smut in a manner that people can receive and understand, like a conclusion to it. Like, is it true? Did you do this? You get what I'm saying? Are people affected? And who's gonna tell on themselves in a sense? Yeah, we see people get on social media and incriminate themselves all the time. However, you know, certain people and their reps can control the viewpoints of it. And obviously we've been seeing it because you can look at the news cycle and you can see what we focus on compared to what we don't focus on. And then we can analyze all of that of importance. Right? And if we're not focusing on, let's say climate control, right? But, and that's severe, right? But we can talk about all of the individuals that, you know, are this labeled individual. You know, like, what is of importance, you know? What's of importance in your household, in a sense, where that makes sense for you to evaluate things on a scale that can be of importance? You know what I mean? Like, so you take your household, let me close this down because it's getting loud, and I want people to hear it. So you take your household and you can evaluate what's of importance, right, in your own household. And sometimes that should be reflective of the worldview, right? Of these things that are important. And obviously the things that are important in your household aren't going to be the world's view of importance. But it can be a base of morality and, you know, of an idea of this is what we should be doing, or this is of importance. You know, we pray. We eat as a family, you know, I don't know. Like, these things, we pay, you know. But it's just interesting to me because everybody's just skipping over the shit that they may have that is, you know, like something of that can incriminate themselves. But they don't, you know. And like I said, I understand why somebody wouldn't get on a platform or a thing and say, well, this is what I did, or this is what happened. But when you have these documents or court record, or, you know, these resources, or, you know, or this point of reference, and you get to evaluate that, and we can, you know, we almost dropped the ball on that. But certain documents that are given to us, we don't overlook that. Like, that's rule, like, right? Like, we got paperwork on snitches and stuff, and that's rule, right? But documents of court records, documents in the same manner that can show, you know, guilt or a participation into something that is foul. You know what I mean? We don't look at. It's interesting to me. I'm going to play some clips. I think it's the Dave Chappelle. And he's brilliant. And people are, you know, chipping at him. You know, like, it's insane. And we don't, you know, this, what we've been given us, it's like a tick for tack, right? It's like, you did this to us, why can't we do, you know, or whatever. And I don't like that. However, it's something to look at and highlight, because it is something to look at and highlight, because it's some inconsistencies in that. So I don't know, you know, like, the fairness of speaking of the ills, right? And to pick a pro and a con of it as it pertains to the ills of what you're, in a sense, against or what you don't like, and then to pick at the ills of your friend, right? And as far as it being pros and cons, right? So it's a balance of checking something, right, and saying that's right, that's wrong. However, we can find a common ground of humor in it. And that's what comedy has done for, to me. Or that's anything you've put in place to help you with something, right? And not like, you know, alcohol abuse or, you know, porn or just getting high and you just saying, like, freak everything. No. But it's like going to, you know, mental health, or going to see somebody, talking to somebody, or journaling, or, you know, working out, or, you know, going to the gym, or going boxing to, you know, release energy, or playing basketball, playing video games, anything to get you, you know, to help you with something. And it doesn't mean that it's a dependency on it. No. Because if I can channel, let's say I can channel my woes and my anxieties and insecurities into music, and that's my way of dealing with it, then that should be it. I'm not saying it, but, you know, you shouldn't be able to say, oh, you know, because somebody's trying to figure it out, you know. And I'm not speaking for myself, I'm just giving examples for something that can be for myself. But however you deal with the ills of the world should be commendable, right? In a fair sense of right, what's right and wrong, right? You know what I mean? Like, we shouldn't be out, you know, causing harm or ruckus, or, you know, offending people, or, you know, to deal with your shit. No. But to be able to, you know, like, say at night you take off the day, right, and you get ready for the next day, and you put on tomorrow, right? So it's like, you know, you put your armor or whatever to get through this shit, right? Because how can we look at this world, right? We look at the ills of it, right? We look at the beauties of it, right? But let's look at the ills of it. And not to focus on the negative or whatever, but, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, if you look at the person that's surviving, you gotta give them kudos in this world. Because it is, this world is, it's tainted, right? So it's commendable for somebody to get up and put on and deal whatever they have to deal with and keep pushing through the day, and, you know what I mean, and whatever. And to condemn or to punish somebody that's trying to find a well-being of themselves in any stage of their life is sad, you know? So I hope you enjoy the Dave Chappelle clip, and I'm sure a lot of people saw it. I mean, watched it, because it's like, they dropped it like a day or two ago, and it's like 3-point-something million, probably more views than that. So you can see it, but I want to, you know, I want to centralize things and make it easier for people. And for people in my demo that, you know, that aren't abreast to it, and not saying they don't care or they, you know, they're not on it, but, you know, for people to be like, oh, I can get that at the hot seat, you know, I can go there for that, you know, like, sometimes we don't got to follow the Shade Rooms, the Jasmine Brands, the Gossips in the City, It's On Sites, and Say Cheeses, and all of that. You can just find one of them that you really like, because the majority of them are going to give you the news, right? They're going to give you what is of culture, or what's important, or what's current events, pop culture, right? So you don't got to follow all of these shits, right, in a sense. You know, so in the same vein, to provide something for people to just go and be like, I'm going to get, I don't know what I'm going to get on an episode. You can look at the descriptions and you can be like, all right, I can get a gauge of what's going on. But to get it all, culture, education, the fly, the ratchet, you know what I mean? Sports, politics, or the view of politics of in our language or view of it, right? In layman's terms, right? It's something that I want to provide, or I intend, or I'm doing. I'm going to play a Russell Simmons clip. And that's, I don't know if I'm going to play the entirety of it, because I think it's like 16 minutes. The Dave Chappelle clip is 10. I've been speaking for 17 minutes on this one. The first segment's around 30, so I don't want to make it an action-packed one. However, I'm going to do so, and if you're in for it, you can listen to it in its entirety, or you can chop that thing down. You don't break that thing up. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? Like, niggas get a whole slab and say, yo, I'm a bag this all up to dimes, nigga. Oh, shit. But, yeah, all my niggas know what I'm talking about. But it's interesting. And in, while we get to that, I want to play another clip, because I want to give you it all. I think I know where I'm going, so let me see where I'm at. Put this on aux. Where is my shit at? Excuse me, nobody's behind me, right? Boom. All right, I want to play this, and this is interesting. Let's bring it back.
TikTok, I need your help to make this go viral. We need to elevate PFC Denisha Montgomery Smith's name. My sister, Denisha Montgomery Smith, she was on a rotation in Germany for 9 months, but she only made it to 8 months. During her stay, she went to an amusement park with four of her battle buddies, and she ended up getting brutally assaulted by all four of them. She made a FaceTime video call to us, the family, and asked us to record it. She said that she didn't trust them and she was in fear for her life. She also mentioned and literally showed us in the video that they were holding her mouth like this. And she said, I was literally afraid to die. Right after that video call, we, the family, made a call to the Red Cross to be able to get her home. That didn't do nothing. She stayed in Germany. They didn't do nothing to get her home. 21 days later, she's found dead in her barracks room. Not only did we get news that my sister died in Germany, but we also got told that she died by suicide by suffocation. Ain't it really weird how in the vehicle on the way back from the amusement park, she literally said that they were choking her and holding her like that? Their chain of command in Germany also pushed out orders for none of the soldiers to talk about it, post about it, or talk to any of the family about it. But what's crazy is this soldier right here, He did. And not only did he post about it, but my sister pulled him over and his friends in the vehicle, and she ended up letting them go without a ticket or anything by orders. But it's weird because he posted that, and then he ended up dead as well in his barracks room, just like my sister. Now, a lot of people might think it's just a coincidence, but that's awfully ironic that literally right after he reposted my sister's story, after getting orders not to even talk about it, post about it, or anything, he was found dead. And they ruled his death from a seizure. They said that he died from a seizure, but he was found with bruises and beating marks on him. So how do you get that? Now, I know you might not care and this might not go viral or whatever, but this has to stop. We have to make a change. It could literally be your sister, mother, aunt, uncle, brother, whoever. We need to make this stop. We need to bring justice to PFC Denisha Montgomery Smith.
Sorry for that loud thug. Cause whoa though, you know what I mean? Like, wow. That is wild to me. Sad story. And shit, should I fear for my, you know, for my existence? Most High got me in any manner. But interesting right there. I'm not against any of military or whatever, or shout out, I know a lot of people that served in the military. We just, right, Veterans Day or you know, salute to our vets, salute to salute to those of fallen soldiers, rest in peace, strength and praise to the families and friends. This situation sounds ridiculous, it's messed up. And hopefully some justice will come to light in this manner. It's more like stuff that I can read on it, but obviously, you know, I'm multitasking. You know, I got this whole recording set up. No. But it's interesting. Shout out to those, my cronies that fought 9/11 for us. Y'all are some ill dudes. We always commend y'all, and we always appreciate y'all, and we always, you know, it was so innocent as of a decision, you know, in 1999 when they left, or when they you know, enlisted. And I don't know about Mike, because I think his family's comes from that background, my homie, but for a bunch of them, it was just the innocence of a moment, and you just want to figure out life, right? You know, you just like, is this my course? Is this my alternative? Is this my route? Because you had, back then it was very basic in a sense. You know, you go to college, you go into the workforce, or you go into the Marines or military, you know? That was, you know, and it's still the same idea. But now with like entrepreneurial at an all-time high, tech and all of this, do it yourself and, you know, all of this, it's different avenues. But back then, you know, it was just a basic decision. You know, I'll do this, go out, get some help, some funding, some money, come back and go into another realm of life, right? Or another career or whatever, right? Or be a vet, or, you know, make a career out of it. And then things turn, and it's like, whoa, you know, they're going to war. It's like, wow. And it wasn't no, I mean, faith, right, and stuff, but it wasn't no say-so of us ever seeing our buddies ever again, our family and friends ever again, you know, because there's so many people that didn't make it. And, you know, them, you know, in particular, if you know, going out together and, you know, having that support system, right, that you got your brother with you, or you, it can help, I'm pretty sure, you know, and because you got somebody to lean on, you got somebody, right? I was watching, you know, not to piggyback, but or to jump around, but watching the Joe Budden episode with dude that I guess allegedly killed Osama or something like that, I think. And he was like, yo, the gang had to rely on each other. So when you were up, you wanted people to know about it because somebody's down that you can help. And if you're down, let somebody know because there's somebody that's going to be up in order to help everybody. You know what I mean? So it's like that accountability. It's interesting. But I don't know, man. It's just wild. And moving along, like I said, I want to play. I'm going to probably play the Dave because it's in order of or the timeline. Then I'm going to play the Russell one, and I'm going to catch y'all probably on the next one. I want to say, like, it was wild of a day because I did express that I saw a lot of dead deer on the highway. And what was it, yesterday or the day before yesterday? One of these days, right? And I really want to... Maybe one... It's wild. And it sounds wild. But maybe one day I could document all of it. Like, just set the day out to do that. And to get video or photos of this, right? Because I don't want... Not saying people think I'm capping, but I want to show dead carcasses and shit. No. But... Shit is kind of interesting that it's all of these dead Bambis on the highway. And then, you know, the other day, it's a little traffic, you know, because you know how traffic slows up when it's an accident or somebody's pulled over and you're like, why is this, what's going on? And then you pass the spectacle and it's like, niggas just wanted to watch somebody getting pulled over or, you know. And for this, I guess it was more of a spectacle because a dude, like a white dude, was pulling a dead deer on the highway, and his and on the opposite road it was a old like F-150 parked. Classic though, you could tell they keep it in shape, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it was dope. I'll drive that shit. Classic F-150, the old school one, probably from like the 80s maybe or early 90s. And that was on the opposite side of the road, though. So I don't know if he was trying to get to a point where he could cross over or and to pop that thing up there. Or maybe his buddy was going to, you know, pull around. And that's what I was thinking. Like, maybe his buddy, he was pulling it down to probably close to an exit where his buddy can get off the exit, come back around and scoop him up. And they can, I don't know, maybe, you know, Thanksgiving's coming up, you know. I tried deer meat at a time. Wasn't that bad. But I thought that was ill because that deer was huge. And this nigga was... And the dude wasn't like a big guy. But he was pushing the deer. Pulling him by his hooves or whatever. And I was like, what the fuck? Look at Jeffrey Dahmer in the flesh. And I know it's a pun now. But... shit was intense. Real quick, I was watching, what is it called? Damn, I forgot the name of this show that's on Netflix. And it's like they highlight sports in a way of like, you know, maybe they'll talk about gambling or athletes selling weed or I don't know. In detail, but it's a few of them that I've watched. And this one about what, Manti Te'o? I remember that shit story, but back then, you know, I didn't give a shit. And I wasn't really paying attention to it. I'm not really big on sports like that. I'm not your average sports nigga. You know what I mean? You're not gonna come over to my house really. Probably the games are gonna be on. And I'm not doing a FanDuel or or, you know what I mean, a fucking fantasy league. No shout out to, no knock to anybody. I'm just saying, it's not for me. You could probably come in the crib and I'm probably got fucking Love & Hip Hop on. Anyway. But this shit was wild, yo, because I don't know if homie, you know, like, was in on it, and that was a ploy to step his brand up or step his story for the Heisman, or, you know, I don't know. But that shit was wild. And if you saw it, you know, I don't want to ruin it, but watch it on your own, and I'm going to ruin it. But obviously, this dude was a star, you know what I mean? He wanted to go to USC. That was his, you know, somebody talked him to going to Notre Dame because he could stand out, I guess, or whatever. He went to Notre Dame. He started wrecking shit. Came in contact with this chick online that he fell in love with, and they started an online relationship and dating. And I guess on that, the other person, because the person's name was, it was a dude, and he came into trans world, and his name was Rania, and then he transitioned into Lynette. So the dude came up with this alter ego because he was, you know, that's where he could sit in his homosexuality without, you know, like, getting what he wanted from it. He wanted more, but that was a way of him getting a lot of what he wanted out of it, I guess. It got too deep, you know what I mean? Niggas want to meet you, they want to see you, FaceTime, you know what I mean? I don't know how I could ever be in a relationship that passes a few days and I can't see the person. Like, whether it's, you know, that was alarming, but niggas in love, you know, hey. But the dude, you know, obviously it was a lie, it was a game, and what Lene had to figure something out, so they said that got in a crazy car accident, she had suffering from leukemia. It was crazy. You know what I mean? So Mateo's grandmother dies or aunt or something like that passes, and he's dealing with that. And then this person Lene comes to with a great idea to say that he passed in a car accident through complications through leukemia. So now he's dealing with this. So he goes on, performs, has an amazing game, amazing seasons and stuff like that. Oh, he was going to go into the draft, but he didn't want to succumb to that pressure or whatever. So he was like, I'm going to stay out my senior year. And he started wrecking havoc, doing dope things. And then, you know, he dedicated the season to his, like, deceased family member and his deceased girlfriend. And this shit became a hoax. You know what I mean? And he had to deal with that shit. So, you know, deal with the scrutiny and all of this shit. And I was just like, whoa, it's crazy, yo. This story is wild. It's sad. I think y'all should watch it if you don't know about the story, even if you know and you want some more detail to it. And it's crazy because I know somebody that looks like that person. You know what I mean? Lene, that I met in San Francisco. But check it out. Hope you enjoy this episode in its entirety. Peace out.
Thank you much for being here. But before I start tonight, I just wanted to read a brief statement that I prepared. I denounce anti-Semitism in all its forms. And I stand with my friends in the Jewish community. And that, Kanye, is how you buy yourself some time. I gotta tell you guys, I've probably been doing this 35 years now. And early in my career, I learned that there are two words in the English language that you should never say together in sequence. And those words are the and juice. I've never heard someone do good after they said that. Kanye's gotten into some scrapes before. Normally when he's in trouble, I pull up immediately. But this time I was like, you know what? Let me see what's going to happen first. I just want to see. Just want to see where this is all going. I can't even remember how it started. Vaguely, I remember it started with a tweet. Strange tweet. It was like, I'm feeling a little sleepy. I'm going to give me some rest, but when I wake up, I'm going to go DEFCON 3 on the Jews. And then he just went to bed. I was up all night worried. What is he going to do to the Jews? I grew up around Jewish people. I have a lot of Jewish friends. So I'm not freaked out by your culture. I know a little bit about it just from hanging around. I'd be like, yo, let's go out at school tomorrow. They'd be like, we can't go out. It's Sha-na-na tomorrow. I'd be like, where? What is Sha-na-na? I had so many questions. Why do some of your people dress like Run DMC? When Kanye woke up from that nap, we went right to work. A year ago, I'd seen him on a podcast called Drink Champs. Well, great show. And it was an amazing appearance. Noriega and them were there, the rappers that I love, and they all had their gold chains and stuff on. And Kanye said, only millionaires wear chains. They said, what? He said, I'm a billionaire. Billionaires don't wear their money on their body. I tucked my chain and I said, oh, snap. It was a good appearance. It was fun and funny. But when he woke up, he went on Drink Champs again. This time, he was on one. He was mad about something. He said, I can say anti-Semitic things, and Adidas can't drop me. Now what? Adidas dropped that nigga immediately. Ironically, Adidas was founded by Nazis. And they were offended. I guess the students surpassed the teacher. It's a big deal. He had broken the show business rules. Is this a rule? You know, the rules of perception. If they're black, then it's a gang. If they're Italian, it's a mob. But if they're Jewish, it's a coincidence, and you should never speak about it. Kanye got in so much trouble, Kyrie got in trouble. Kyrie Irving posted a link to a movie that he had seen on Amazon. No caption on the post or nothing like that, but apparently this movie had some, I don't know, anti-Semitic tropes or something. It was some weird title, like From Hebrew to Negro or something. And the NBA told me he should apologize, and he was slow to apologize. And then the list of demands to get back in their good graces got longer and longer, and this is where, you know, I draw the line. I know the Jewish people have been through terrible things all over the world, but you can't blame that on black Americans. You just can't. You know what I mean? Thanks for the one person that said who. A fair punishment would be you should just post a link to Schindler's List and y'all write your own captions. Kyrie Irving's black ass was nowhere near the Holocaust. In fact, he's not even certain it existed. I saw one news pundit screaming about Kanye. She said, mental health is no excuse for that type of language. Yes, it is, bitch. You can kill somebody if you're mentally ill. Listen, okay, I don't think Kanye is crazy at all. I think he's possibly not well. Well, I've been to Hollywood. No one wants y'all to get mad at me. I'm just telling you, I've been to Hollywood. This is just what I saw. It's a lot of juice. Like a lot. But that didn't mean anything. You know what I mean? There's a lot of black people in Ferguson, Missouri. Doesn't mean we run the place. I could see if you had some kind of issue. You know what I mean? You might go out to Hollywood and your mind might start connecting some kind of lines and you could maybe adopt the delusion that the Jews run show business. It's not a crazy thing to think. But it's a crazy thing to say out loud in a climate like this. Now the midterms are over and it's crazy climate. And I got to tell you, I feel like this midterm, like all of humanity depends on it. And it's an ominous sign. The most ominous sign of the midterms, I believe, would be Herschel Walker, who I don't want to speak badly of because he's black. But I have to admit, he's observably stupid. Even when he's not talking, his mouth be open a little bit like. He's the kind of guy that looks like he thinks before he makes a move on tic-tac-toe. And I'm watching the news now, they're declaring the end of the Trump era. Now, okay, I can see how in New York you might believe this is the end of his era. I'm just being honest with you. I live in Ohio amongst the poor whites. A lot of you don't understand why Trump was so popular, but I get it because I hear it every day. He's very loved. And the reason he's loved is because people in Ohio have never seen somebody like him. He's what I call an honest liar. Well, I'm not joking right now. He's an honest liar. That first debate, I'd never seen anything like it. I've never seen a white male billionaire screaming at the top of his lungs, "This whole system is rigged," he said. And across the stage was a white woman, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, sitting over there looking at him like, "No, it's not." I said, "Now, wait a minute, bro. It's what he said." And the moderator said, "Well, Mr. Trump, if in fact the system is rigged, as you suggest, what would be your evidence?" You remember what he said, bro? He said, "I know the system is rigged because I use it." I said, "God damn." And then he pulled out an Illuminati membership card and chopped a line of cocaine up and did it right into the podium. No one had ever heard someone say something that true. And then Hillary Clinton tried to punch him in the taxes. She said, "This man doesn't pay his taxes." He shot right back, "That makes me smart." And then he said, "If you want me to pay my taxes, then change the tax code. But I know you won't, because your friends and your donors enjoy the same tax breaks that I do." And with that, my friends, a star was born.
Let me share what's in my meditation on this, and you talk after. So I woke up this morning, and I got 3 copies of Dave Chappelle's words sent to me. I went to bed, you know, I live in Bali a lot. Half my time is spent here in Bali. The other half the time, I'm with you guys in the mess, but half the time I'm here. And so I don't see things at the same time you see them. So I saw Dave Chappelle's monologue on Saturday Night Live. Like, wow. It's loaded because, you know, I'm very sensitive to the Jewish community and to their pain. And so when I saw Dave say things that are hard to digest, I was like, wow, what they gonna do, cancel him? So it became, and then I saw Abe Foxman, not Abe Foxman, no, God. I saw Abe Foxman's letter about Farrakhan. The only media about Farrakhan's speech was Abe Foxman's letter that he wrote in the Wall Street Journal. Abe Foxman's the former head of the ADL. Anyway, I spoke to the minister a few days ago as well, at length, after his speech. And it was, you know, as always, you know, his honest impression of where we in black and black Americans are and our relationship with the Jewish community and the world. And so it was more of the minister. Well done. Beautiful speech in its execution. And the words, some of them are very biting. But we'll talk about that another time. I love the minister. I say that often. People get upset. Many people are canceled just for saying they know him. Obama's like, I don't, you know, he's friends with the minister, but he had denounced him to be president. And everybody who hasn't denounced him, most have lost their jobs. Arsenio lost his job for 20 years. Anyway, that's another subject as well. So I spoke to the minister and I had a good talk with him. But yesterday, again, and I've been speaking pretty regularly to the new head of the ADL. That man's name is Jonathan Goldblatt. And Jonathan is, you know, I really sympathize with him because he is doing everything he can to protect the Jewish community against any repeats of any of the atrocities that they have experienced in the past. And the more he can do, the best way to do it, it's always whether you could suppress an idea or whether you should invest. It's always, as in Israel, you know, people are afraid. Should they use force? Should they use love? Should they use a combination of force and love? These are the questions, you know, when you're trying to survive. How do you get your adversaries to love you and to allow you to exist? And how do you promote fairness so that you can exist for a long time, right? Because if you promote love, then there's a lasting partnership. And if you promote force, because that's all you feel is left, then you always got a potential for an uprising. So we go back to Dave Chappelle and his words. He talked about the power dynamic. And this is the issue and the bottom of all of it. If you look at my post, which I'm going to repost because it's so important, about my partnership with the Jewish community in every single industry. Jewelry, fashion, film, television, music, financial services. I mean, only because it was the white man was in charge. But the white man who was in charge of a lot of the industries more than pound for pound, very powerful, are the Jewish members of those industries, the Jewish community members. And they are the ones who've empowered not only me, but almost every black billionaire or black success story in these industries. It has been a Jewish partner that's empowered them. So when you say that, it's beautiful to see that the Jews are such great collaborators, but then it also leads to, well, why do you have to go to a Jewish member? Why can't you just do it? Well, because all industry requires partnership, and because they, in many cases, in financial service, in jewelry, and in fashion, well, not in fashion, but in the shmata business or the garment business, these are jobs left for the Jews by the WASPs. Left for the Jews by the WASPs. Entertainment is even dirty. Money is dirty. These are things that were given to them, and they turn lemons into lemonade. So it is their good fortune. It is their good fortune that they are successful in these industries. But it is also a curse, because it has been the nucleus of the critique of the Jewish community in various societies where they have been attacked for having success. It is cultural. It is in their religion and culture to fend for themselves and to be good merchants, businessmen. And it is cultural, something that we were robbed of when it comes to our most beautiful culture. We have reinvented ourselves and we have made the most powerful culture in America, but and in the world. But that is not necessarily empowering. Although hip-hop is becoming more and more empowering, and the only success stories we have are coming out of hip-hop. And they're not only in hip-hop, they're taking their hip-hop power, as I did, and spreading it throughout other industries. But in general, the idea of empowerment for community is a core component in the Jewish community. It's why they have survived. So the question is, how then do we protect ourselves, if we are Jewish, against the rising discussion of the power dynamic? What do we do? Like, if we mention power and Jew, we're in trouble. Because they are definitely in trouble, or have been in trouble, every time anybody has ever mentioned power and Jew, success and Jew. Every time you mention it, they're threatened because they have had the experience. You can't tell them that it's good for people to talk about the success of the Jews. So this is a real, real question. And I talked to Abe Foxman and I didn't get along on a lot. He's the one who wrote the letter about the minister. He's the former head of the ADL. But the new ADL, Jonathan, is very interested in creating a discussion and promotion and empowerment vehicle in a Black Jewish foundation, which I've mentioned and talked about. He really understands why pound for pound this successful community against pound for pound this not so successful community have so much in common and such a common enemy and so much they can do good together. And it should not just be talk. It should be business. It should be, how do we empower the Black community? They have numbers. We have some power. When you put the numbers and the power together, we can protect ourselves against the common threat of white supremacy. Because it's not that the Blacks are mentioning the power dynamic and that the white supremacists aren't watching, and to their delight, it's a reason to put a sword in the hearts of the Jewish community. And white supremacists are benefiting watching us fight. So the discussion of the power dynamic and the use of it as a collaborative tool is what we must discuss today. We have to talk about a partnership between Blacks and Jewish that will uplift economically the Black community and will help them to empower their communities in the ways that Jewish people have empowered themselves. It's nothing wrong with a discussion that kind of mirrors reparations. There's nothing wrong with, you know, look, when we were trying to get in the music business, I'll give you a few stories. When we were trying to get in the music business and we had our music and we were the core and most powerful cultural dynamic, but we were starving because we didn't have distribution. It was the Jews who were allowed to be in the music industry who took their power and got us on the radio and got us in music in a more meaningful way. When I went to the jewelry business, because they asked me to go to work with Mandela, and I went to meet with him, and we talked about the Diamond Empowerment Fund. When I went back, of course, it was the Jews from the Oppenheimer family and all in, the Jews in Africa, the Jews here, the Jews everywhere, who wanted to help me build schools. And millions of dollars were pumped into schools that educate uplifted Africans. So that was the Diamond Empowerment Fund, but it was the Jews. And in America, it was the Jews who put me in the jewelry business. Simmons Jewelry, if you might remember, before your time. What I'm telling you is that there is a partnership, a collaboration, and that we have to find a way to discuss the dynamic, but not use it as a way to hurt the community, but they must help us use it in a way to uplift their community, not only economically, but in terms of their status and their appreciation of their presence in America. Because the hate is rising, 5 times the number of hate crimes against them, and they're such a small community, they feel threatened. So can we make profit out of pain? Thank you, Well, to profit out of pain. That's what I'm going to call this, profit out of pain. There is pain. Can we empower economically our brothers, and can we use our numbers to protect and empower our brothers and build bridges that will lift us all up and protect us from the threat of white supremacy. This is my discussion today that was on my heart, especially after watching Dave Chappelle, because there's no canceling him on this. And we can't just suppress the idea that we're doing well as Jewish members of the American community. We must partner with our brothers and sisters in a Black Jewish Foundation coalition. And it has to make money. It has to be. You know, I told a story to Minister Farrakhan, and I told it the other day on this, the story, I told this to Minister Farrakhan 20 some odd years ago about, and I told it to you, if you remember, on the, I'm going to put up the old blog or old talk. The Jewish, Syrian Jewish guy comes to me and said, let's buy this building. And I said, well, the building that sold our clothes, by the way, because there were many buildings selling Fat Farm. Must have been two Dr. Days, two Jimmy Jazz, S&D's. There were so many places, high-end stores that sold high-end hip-hop clothes that were owned by the Syrian community, a small Jewish community in Brooklyn, owned all of these buildings and all this business on 125th Street in Harlem. I said the reason that they owned it is because the WASP didn't want them and the Blacks couldn't afford them. It was just business. Let's buy this building, promote Black-owned, and let everyone know that Blacks didn't own the other buildings. So that seemed pretty tough on your cousin who owns the building next door. It's business. So we didn't do the building. I should have, because the building, of course, is worth a fortune now. But the point I'm making is it's business. If we want to make this world a better place, entrepreneurs are part of it. Entrepreneurs will clean up the stuff in the ocean and turn it into bricks and build buildings out of it. Entrepreneurs will make straws that are not made out of plastic but made out of some fabric that disintegrates. Entrepreneurs will save us from our horrific choices. Entrepreneurs will make meat out of test tubes instead of raising animals that destroy the plant. Entrepreneurs, business, business, business. So in the communities where we are more vegan, in the communities where we build ideas, in the communities where we are talented in various different industries, let us partner when necessary and let it make sense economically to everyone involved. Get the Robert Smiths and the Bob Johnsons and the next Kanye, and maybe even save and bring back Kanye, and partner with our brothers and sisters and build up our communities. And it's, again, it's kind of like reparations. It's not a handout. And again, the Jewish community needs your partnership. You have something of great value, your numbers, and something of great value, your culture and your creativity. So let's use that and partner with that and build a new reality. And also, let's protect ourselves against the angry mob of white supremacists that is growing as we speak. That's it. So I'm going to post my experiences with the Jews. I'm going to promote my experiences with the Jews. I'm going to build a coalition where my experiences with the Jews are a model for the experiences of other African Americans with their Jewish brothers and sisters. Because today, my friends in the Syrian community who came to my wedding in St. Bart's, who go there every year still, and who have been 50 to 75 families that who've been uplifted by our partnership, they have had great experiences. They can testify to what great partnership. Oh, my brother, come on with me live. Brother, you are a perfect Jewish businessman. Burrell Solomon. Solomon, ask the request to come on live. Let's have a talk. Let's talk about the empowerment of Blacks and Jews through partnerships. You would be a great partner to join our coalition. Let's go, he says. So how do I get you on here? Can't you press to try to go live with me? Maybe not. All right, so it's long enough already. People don't want to listen too much. But just know that we must build a partnership and a coalition for the future. Not to judge or cancel, especially when we talk about the power imbalance. Let us just acknowledge it and use it to lift us up. Thank you. Namaste, yogis.
Man, all this killing and murder been getting me on. Like, I've been feeling like a real law-abiding citizen lately, man. I was in an interview with Vlad. Vlad was like, yeah, that nigga who killed Jordan's father. It was like two dudes who killed Jordan's father. So I said, yo, they doing life? He said, nah. They doing like some crazy bit though. It was like 30. I ain't gonna lie. Instinctively, I said, they deserve 30 more. I don't know. Tired of the killing, bro. Like, bro, like people gotta learn, enjoy their life, man. And really, like, it's mostly like people who's out the way getting killed and shit like that, man. This shit's just not cool no more, dog. QC mom. Okay. What the fuck? What's going on here? What's this? Hold on.
Gang petty bullshit. I did not know Takeoff, and I'm the mother of
hold on.
Gang petty mafia. Tell me, what do y'all think about this whole entire situation? Don't forget to like, subscribe, and comment.
Sweetie, my name's Lisa, and I'm the mother of Quality Control Music, Pierre Thomas, and I have a lot of thoughts. First of all, Gigi, would you please let me do this, because I've reached out to every platform I could. I don't have social media. I'm not on Instagram or none of that other stuff. My heart is so torn. First of all, if this is the only way that I can let the mother of Takeoff and the grandmother and the family of Takeoff, I want them to know my heart is so torn, and I am so with her in prayer, with them in prayer. Because this situation right here, their family would never be the same. Now, I'm a victim of this bullshit. I didn't.
Hey, chat. It's very important for me to know, is this fake or is it real? I don't want to play anything that's purporting to be real. There's serious consequences to this. I wouldn't, you know. Again, when y'all say somebody's mom, these people are not public figures. If they're putting out a statement, they're choosing to be public. But I don't. If it's a fake thing, I don't want to put nobody in the line of fire who don't deserve it. And I understand that how big my platform is. Is this real? Okay, some are saying it's real, some are saying it's fake. All right, let me listen to this and I'll give my determination on what I believe it is, because I think it's kind of like mixed. Here we go.
Not know Takeoff. I did not know Quavo. I met Offset a long time ago, and I have my own opinions. I personally can't stand the industry. I can't stand none of these. Real talk, I'm a sacrifice. So you better know this. They come for what is pure. They come for the one that's got the love, okay? Because I got a lot of love. But when I tell you, your enemies always be close. I have had my family members.
Chat, is this real? I have no idea if it's real. I'm listening to it as is.
To jump me, I've been isolated ever since this label started and Amigos got their first Grammy. My son said to me, Mama, I'm congratulating him, But he said to me, and this is my firstborn, Mama, your life over with. It's been 6 years. The whole prima donna came and got with my youngest son, who is the weakest link. And I tell you what, I'm not going to make this about me today. But I've been jumped. I've been jailed. I've been made to look crazy. I've been made to look.
Okay. Is this fucking real? Grant, is this real? I seen you say skip it. Are you saying skip through it or? Like, I don't even, like, again, if this ain't real, I don't even want to speak on his mom. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't want nobody to speak on my mom.
All right, look, then I'm a junkie. I'm this and I'm that. Let me tell you something. You can raise a child on their knees. You can take them in the church of God in Christ because I did all that. My house was a house of prayer, but a snake is a snake is a snake is a snake. These witches, these warlocks, they be in your own damn bloodline. Now, I just want to give my condolences to this family. I feel that Takeoff had the spirit of the dove. I feel that he had the heart of the lion. I feel that this young man was chosen. Now, they go into this stuff. I told my son, because I heard the young lady talking about what you should teach a child. Well, I told my son this, and I talked to all my children. I was a raw, uncut parent, and I told them about life and about the way it really is. And I remember telling my sons, let me tell y'all the truth about life and about the way it really is. The devil gonna offer you the world just like he did Jesus. He don't just come to rich folk. He come to the chosen one. And I said, now, it's gonna be your choice because see, God, he don't force himself on nobody. Don't think that the devil ain't offered me his kingdom way long ago. I could have been with the rich man. I had 3 kids, that rich man money. I got enough to do what I needed to do, and I knew when to pull back. I am very, very uncomfortable with this situation. I wanted to go pay my respect to take off. But I couldn't because they already got my picture down now. They're gonna humiliate me, have me locked up, say I'm crazy. So God told me to stay back. You talked about the gift of discernment. I am a counselor, and so I know the way take off. I know that he was intuitive. And I'm sure that he felt something. Listen, you follow the closest one that's closest to you, and it can cost you your life. My health is all messed up. My sister jumped me from behind in a Christmas dinner. They flew me from L.A. After that, my son tripped me in the dark, let a trunk down on my back. So don't tell me what family won't do. I'm in court right now with my aunt who been dragging me in and out of court on false accusations. I finally get a damn TPO on her. She want to move the judge out the way so she can get what she want. What the hell wrong with you? Can't just leave me alone. Because, see, jealousy is as cruel as the grave, baby.
What the fuck?
I'm real mad about shit with Takeoff, Jay Prince, and Jazz Prince, and Jay Prince Jr. And I'm so sorry. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to message video. I saw a lot of messages. I'm not going to try to say.
Oh, boy. That was exhausting. What the fuck was that? All right. Jesus Christ, Chad. Grant was a cement. Turn that shit off, man. That chick said she was a cancer. I don't even know what that means. God damn it. Fuck. Anyway.